message here might be what? If you stopped at this point, don't supplement cows, wean late, as long as they're in increasing plane of nutrition, you get that flushing effect, you're going to have no effect on pregnancy rate in those cows. Well, if you stop there, that might be a conclusion you drew. But in our work is systems work, so we're involved. If we do a treatment to a cow, per se, we want to know how it affects the entire system. So that led to, and so we finish all the calves that come from these cows, and we look at reproductive performance on all the heifer calves. And what was seen in this first study was that those cows that were weaned late and not supplemented had steers that were 60 pounds lighter at harvest. Something that occurred even before that animal was born affected carcass weights. Not so much if they were early weaned. The subsequent study that was done was supplementation or not, and then a post-calving management of either grazing meadows or feeding meadow hay. Again, no difference in pregnancy rates on those cows due to supplementation or not. We did see a difference in the percentage of live calves weaned if they came from a cow that was supplemented in late gestation while grazing winter range. Well, I asked the question, what about the heifers? What if we ultrasounded the cows, found all the heifer calves, don't supplement those cows, could we develop, make a heifer that was lighter mature weight? Well, we didn't do that, but I did some pretty intensive work with the heifers coming from cows that were either supplemented or not. And in fact, we saw that heifers, and this is at preg check, heifers that came from cows that weren't supplemented, 30 pounds lighter. Well, the most important question is what, though? What did we do to reproduction? We saw no difference in age at puberty, no difference in percent cycling at the beginning of the breeding season, but look at the percent difference in those that calved in the first 21 days and overall pregnancy rates if they came from a cow that wasn't supplemented. So it's of interest to me, guys, what's going on here? We got animals that are cycling that are essentially the same time at puberty, but we have difference in pregnancy rates and those born in the first 21 days. Our current study that we're looking at, again, in this systems approach, is looking at maybe even a cheaper feed source. And currently, the cheapest feed source we have in the state of Nebraska, as well as a lot of other parts of the country, is corn stalks. So we have cows on corn stalks with and without protein supplement, or winter range, as in the previous two studies, with and without protein supplement. And again, we're seeing steers and heifers. This is range supplement, range no supplement. If they come from a cow that's not supplemented, about 30 pounds lighter weaning weights, but not on corn stalks. We're not seeing this benefit of protein supplementation on the unborn calf on corn stalks. What about pregnancy rate? Supplemented on range and no supplement, 93 versus 76%. And again, those heifers coming from unsupplemented cows are lighter, but they have lower pregnancy rates, but not on corn stalks. Does not seem to be affecting these animals that are developing on stocks. We're doing some work on feed efficiency in these heifer calves, and without going into a lot of data, I'll tell you that we have feed efficiency data that would indicate we are affecting the feed efficiency of these heifer calves even before they're born. So not only are we affecting carcass weights in the steers, we're affecting pregnancy rates in the heifers, and we're also affecting feed efficiency in the heifer calves. What about the steers? We've got 2 years of steer data currently on this study, and those steers that are developed from cows that are fed from cows that are not supplemented on range, 50 pounds lighter live weight at harvest, not so on corn stalks. And it's interesting to me, and we got one more set of steers that are currently in the feedlot. If this holds true, whether independent of supplementation, cows that are wintered on stocks have steers that are heavier at harvest. And what implications does that have for the beef industry if that holds true? Another interesting facet as far as these steers is independent of winter system, range, or stocks, we're seeing protein supplementation to those cows, stocks or range, we got steers that are grading better. 82% choice versus 59% choice in steer calves that come from cows that are supplemented in late gestation versus those that are not. And I use a little bit of caution with this data because this is only two sets of cattle. We will harvest the third set of steers this spring, early summer. We've known about this in other animals, humans, for a long time. This fetal programming effect. A stimuli experienced during fetal development may impact postnatal growth and physiology. There's very little evidence in the literature that this, in fact, is true in beef cattle. We have three studies now that will demonstrate that. I think Larry Cora might have been one of the first, and maybe this was by accident or not, but he had restriction of first calf heifers during the final 100 days of gestation resulted in a tendency for increased age and puberty in their subsequent female progeny. I'm not aware of any other data out there in beef cattle that demonstrates these effects we're seeing. So what's the common link? We got differences in carcass weights. We got difference in heifer pregnancy rates. We got differences in feed efficiency. And now if it holds true with this last set of calves, we got differences in quality grade by something that's happened to that calf before it was even born. Got some theories. A lot more work to do, obviously.
Thank you, Rick. This is great stuff, isn't it, guys? I'll tell you what, that's really interesting stuff. No doubt about it. We're going to conclude our session this morning before, I hope, a real interesting question and answer session with a new technology session that's going to be presented by Dr. Sandy Johnson and Dr. Cliff Lamb.
Well, this morning we're going to try and briefly cover some of the newer technologies that are now coming more to bear. And in your proceedings, you see an article from George Seidel, who did that, covered that topic for us in Billings at our Applied Reproductive Strategies. You'll find that a very reader-friendly article, and they may give you more details than what we currently have or are able to share with you this morning. And so the first on the list, then, is gender-selected or sex semen. We do have a variety of commercially available sources in the country now. And the scientifically credible method of sorting semen is based on the difference in amount of DNA between the X and Y chromosome, with about 3.8% more DNA on the X chromosome than in the Y. And this allows the sorting technology to work. Now, over time, there's been other attempts to sort gender of semen different ways, but has not held up to be a valid method. With this, we can get roughly 90% of the desired gender in one sorted method. Now, this cartoon will allow us to briefly look at this sorting technology. Initially, there'll be a dye applied to the cells in order to bind to the different amounts of DNA. Goes through a sorting machine, which is a very expensive machine. And even though they're expensive, it does not indicate that at the end of the day you've necessarily produced a lot of doses of semen, which is one of the drawbacks to the process right now, is the speed and the cost of the process. Hard to generate a lot of material very rapidly. And one of the things that has to happen for the sorting to occur is essentially to get these cells to line up one at a time going through this process. So when they go through this laser beam, they are in a one at a time in a correct orientation. And, of course, we want to sort as much as rapidly as we can. And so that means we've got to line those guys up very quickly, close together. And that's one of the challenges to make it more efficiently. And sometimes the orientation that they come through is not proper, and those cells end up, as they come through this charge portion, which essentially, based on the gender, goes one side or the other based on the charge. Some of them that are not oriented properly then go in the middle container and become waste. We don't know which those are. And as I indicated then, depending on the speed of the process, we get roughly 90% of the desired gender. If we make it go faster, then we increase the waste and perhaps not as accurate. So that's kind of where they've moderated the technology right now with speed and cost. So, because we are going to waste some cells, and we generally only want one gender, we're not going to find some of our highest demand bulls available with gender-sorted semen. We're going to waste roughly 60 to 70%. So if you can sell 100% of it, you're not going to sort it and not be able to sell a large percentage of it. Most of the bulls that are available as gender-sorted semen right now are on the dairy side. A limited number of beef bulls are available. The cost is generally roughly $30 over the unsorted option, and the fertility is going to be lower than a normal AI fertility, and that has to do with the rigors essentially those cells go through in the sorting process. It takes a longer period of time at the end of the sorting. Then they also centrifuge those to concentrate the cells. So all those things make it a little harder for those cells to remain normal and have the motility they did when initially collected. So we estimate roughly 70 to 90% of normal AI conception rates when we use sex semen. Now, we do hope that the technology will improve over time, but we're probably not looking at this year or next year. We're further down the road to get some of the levels of improvement that we'd really like to see there. But it seems like this is one of the technologies we were waiting for to finally come on the market, and indeed it is here. So that, to me, is great news to have the option there. Now, where are we going to use it? Well, certainly want to, because of the reduced fertility, we only want to use it where we have an existing very high-quality AI program, and generally that's going to be in virgin heifers where we're going to use that. If we go to superovulated system, certainly those gender that we select for needs to be very valuable because we do seem to reduce the number of transferable embryos when we use that sex semen. Now let me come back to the comment about trying it on 20 or more head. Let's use an example. If we use 10 head, and normally we get a 60% pregnancy rate, so we'll have 6 AI pregnancies. 3 of those might be male, 3 female. If we use gender-sorted semen on 10 head, well, if normally we got 60% pregnancy rates, well, if the typical reduction is about 70%, so 60 times 70 gets us down to roughly 4.2 AI pregnancies of gender-sorted, and we're going to have then maybe 90% accuracy in the sorting, so we haven't gained anything really in the measurable number of our selected gender. We have 3 when we just AI'd with unsorted semen. We have 2 to 3 with that number of head with the sex-sorted semen. So if you're going to try it, make sure that you understand the math and the logistics of that. You may get slightly higher, but the math isn't... the odds aren't necessarily for you. So trying it with larger numbers is probably a better use of your time. Okay, let's talk just a little bit about pregnancy testing and early pregnancy testing. More and more practitioners have purchased an ultrasound and are able to use that in their practices. Rick mentioned these open heifers coming off of pasture, and we've certainly in the drought years been able to use ultrasound to find those heifers even earlier to get them off the pastures and leave a little bit more grass for our heifers that are pregnant. We can do that as early as 30 days. We could actually check a few days before that. It takes a little more time and skill to do that. So practically with any number, 30 days is a good guideline from when we can go in and do that early ultrasound. The cost is going to depend on the number and the quality of your facilities. The poorer the facilities and the fewer the head, the cost is certainly going to go up. Now, there is a blood test available. It's this Bioprin pregnancy yes or no will work after 30 days of pregnancy. Simply take a blood sample, send it into the lab. The actual cost to run the sample is about $2.25, but you will have some additional cost to buy the sampling tubes, ship it, sending it in. the downside at this point would be that you won't know at the time those animals are in the pen whether or not they're pregnant and where you're going to send them. That you'd have to come back another day if you wanted to take an action based on that pregnancy status. So that's the advantage of doing a real-time ultrasound. You know that day how you want to manage those animals. Now, there is another earlier pregnancy test that we're hoping will make it to market. It's certainly in the development stages right now. It will detect pregnancy about day 17 to 18. And it should be a shoot side test, perhaps in this $5 range. These are all fairly speculative right now. This is probably good gossip, and time will tell how long it takes them to get there. Now, the biggest use when this comes to market is likely to be in the dairy industry, where they can use this to essentially do a test at that point in time and decide where they're going to resynchronize those cows again for another timed insemination. We can use it very similarly in the beef industry to do that early detection and resynchronize them, but perhaps the interest in the additional labor on the beef side will not be as great as what there is on the dairy side. But an exciting opportunity that we hope to have before too long. And with that, Cliff is going to talk a little more about
more technology. You know, while Sandy was sitting there talking, she said that there's about 3.8% more DNA in the female sperm than the male sperm. I told my wife the other day, I thought that was the talking gene. certainly there are a lot of advantages that we're going to, and we're still discovering the advantages with sex semen. One of the technologies that I've spent a lot of time working on is embryo transfer technology. And briefly, again, embryo transfer technology is taking a cow. This isn't a cow on the left, that's a uterus. Basically taking a cow of superior genetics and stimulating her to produce more eggs, flushing those embryos out, and then transferring individual embryos into less genetically superior cattle, and then they can basically give birth to the more genetically superior calves. So not a lot has changed. This is the oldest technology of those that we're talking about right now. But when we start talking about what has changed in the industry, I'm going to say that very little has changed in terms of our ability to change the average number of embryos that we collect from donor cows. Internationally, the average is about 6.3, and over the last 25 years, I don't think we've seen that average change about less than a 0.1%. That 6.3 seems to be very, very normal. Out in the field, what you actually hear is you only hear of all the great results, but you very seldom hear of all the poor results. But when we report all of these results, that hasn't changed much. What has changed is the fact that we have figured out ways to collect more embryos from more cows in different types of fertility programs. Similarly, we haven't seen many changes over the last 25 years in the pregnancy rates to fresh versus frozen semen. Our biggest changes in this technology have been with the development of direct transfer embryos. Initially, when the direct transfer method came out, there was a lot of inconsistencies, but I think we've designed the protocols enough now to this point that the consistency of direct transfer embryos and the techniques used to transfer those embryos is very, very good and gives you as good a result as the old glycerol method. There are still some practitioners that used to freeze embryos with glycerol that we just cannot convince to use direct transfer methods, but really the fertility is not that much different. And again, fresh embryo transfer, 62%. Some of you might be getting higher, especially in the north central part of the U.S. That is closer to about 65%, but then you get down into the southern part of the country and it's closer to 60%. So the average is around 62%. What is happening in the industry today? And you look at the average number of flushes. It seems to be fairly consistent, maybe a slight little rise now. Internationally, we have about 131,000 flushes every year versus 66,000 in the U.S. So it really hasn't changed that much over the years, maybe doubled in the last 10 years. But when you have a look at, to me, the biggest changes internationally are generally in the in vitro fertilization world. And the in vitro fertilization world here really shows what has happened over the last 5 to 6 years. Notice internationally the number of embryos that have been transferred. About 183,000 embryos have been transferred in 2005, which is the most recent data. But when you look at the green bar here, this is the embryos transferred in the U.S. Only about only between 1 and 3,000 embryos transferred every year in the U.S. produced by in vitro fertilization. And so internationally, we're really noticing that Brazil, which is by far the biggest IVF producer in the world, is transferring about 100% more embryos than what we're transferring here, 100 times more embryos than what we're transferring in the U.S. China is also another part of the world. Now, people ask, well, why is the U.S. lagging behind so much? And this has always been my contention, is that embryo transfer is extremely expensive in terms of maintaining open recipients. That's the most expensive part of an embryo transfer program, and that's especially the case in the U.S. In Brazil, where they've got acres and acres of grass, they can run those cows open for a period of time, and it doesn't affect them as much. China, they're still developing the technology, but transferring a lot. So they've figured out how to make the IVF system work. We're still working on that. The other thing is that we have very few companies that are doing this. There's very little competition, and the price of IVF is very expensive in this country compared to other parts of the world.